M, and this is impossible because precisely using results on the Diophantine approximation, you can drop the pi from here, x0 is irrational. Of course, the best you can do is get an approximation of the order of 1 over k. And this, for numbers which are, I think, algebraic of order 1 or 2, right? So the message to pass is that if x0 is irrational, you can get all these ways to be non-zero, but you will always lose one derivative in the sense that the energy you will recover will never be the little L2 norm of the Fourier coefficients, but you will have at least in front of it a degeneracy of the weights of the order of 1 over k. Now, you can play with the Diophantine approximation theory, and you can, for instance, prove that if you use the classical Liouville numbers, then you can make these weights to vanish exponentially. It means that even though x0 irrational was a good idea, depending on the irrationality class you are, you may have extremely weak inequalities for your problem. Okay, so this is finally what you get. You get an inequality in which, so this is a different way of viewing things. This is also homework. The first time I saw this problem, I took it in this way, and it was nice to see the same kind of weights and the Diophantine approximation issues appear. Now, instead of using Fourier series, you could say, well, I will use that Lambert formula to the left and to the right. If you do that, taking into account that the length x0 to the left is not the same as the length L2 to the right, when you write the wave equation using that Lambert formula and you apply the two boundary conditions you have on 0 and 1, this is the two informations you will get. You are given a function psi, which is unknown, for which the only thing you know is that this shift by number 2L1 provides you a function which is this finite difference is in L2. On the other hand, this other finite difference is also in L2. And you would like to guess whether knowing the L2 norm of this finite difference and this other one, you can recover something about the norm of this function psi. Well, of course, the first thing to be said is that if L1 over L2 is rational, this is impossible, right? Because you have periodic functions, which both periods, for which this will be zero by periodicity, this will be zero by periodicity, and of course, this function doesn't have any reason to be zero. So you have to impose, of course, L1 over L2 to be irrational. And now, indeed, knowing that f and g vanish, you know that psi vanishes. But if you try to identify this norm, you will end up dealing exactly with the same problem as before. L1 over L2 is irrational, suffices to write in the Fourier expansion of this norm, but then you will have weights, and these weights will degenerate depending on the Diophantine class in which L1 over L2 is living. Well, why is this related to networks? Well, of course, networks, you know certainly much more than I. There are many different kinds. The complexity may increase. Still, we are only living in planar networks. Dealing with 3D networks will be much more complicated and certainly more interesting as well. So before anything, let me give you what is the wave equation on this network. Well, I think instead of explaining the notation to anyone, it's better to write the wave equation yourself, right? In fact, it's simply a matter of writing what the Laplacian of the network is. Once you have the Laplacian on the network, you say, well, it's simply phi tt equal Laplacian phi. So what is the Laplacian on the network? The network is constituted by edges, segments, straight lines, finite segments. They have vertices, some of them are interior, and some of them are on the exterior. Whenever you have a vertex on the interior, since we are dealing with the Dirichlet problem, you say the corresponding function vanishes. Of course, the function is defined in all these networks so that, in fact, we are dealing with a finite collection of functions living each of them, define each of them in this space interval and also evolving in time. So in the exterior nodes, you impose the boundary condition to be zero. In each edge, you will take the classical D'Alembert equation, phi tt equal phi xx. So time acceleration equal to curvature on the deformation. And then whenever you are in an inner node, since we are thinking of some elasticity system in which this structure is vibrating in the normal direction, I will keep the condition, the so-called Kirchhoff realization of the Laplacian, which is the simplest one, in which all the deformations are equal on that point, and the addition of normal derivatives vanishes, so that the total system, the complete system you recover, is conservative. And once you do that, what you see is that this is precisely the wave equation on the network for which the total energy is conserved. What is the total energy of the network? It's simply the addition of the energy of the vibration of each segment, each energy being the addition of the kinetic energy and the potential energy. That's it. Now you write it as you like, right? With your notation. But it's better not to understand the notation of others. Okay, so there are at least three degrees of complexity. One of them is the star. Okay, so we all know what is a star. This is the star with three single elements, which is a tripod. And, well, since this is an HPO talk, I have... Okay, so this is to convince you that there are indeed high oscillations involved. Now, for the three-point, for the three-star, three-string network star, things are rather easy. So assume this is the star, this is the tripod. Again, I am trying to analyze these vertical deformations of this tripod, which at rest is occupying this simple graph. Assume I was making measurements over that point, only one of them. So I have a sensor located on this external vertex. What will happen? Well, following the D'Alembert formula, I will be able to propagate information from this point along this segment, because while I am in this segment, I don't feel there is any complexity built in. This is simply the classical string equation on a 1D segment. I propagate energy. So what I reach, when I reach here, what will happen? Well, I will be precisely in the same situation as before, in which I was, you remember, I was dealing with this problem in which I was measuring one string from one single point. This is why I devoted some time to this one. So the tripod is exactly equal to this one. You are making measurements on one of the ends, the energy propagates along that edge, and then you get to the intersection point, and when you get to the intersection point, you know what the answer is. The answer is exactly the same as for the string, which is of length L1 plus L2, and for which this point is the X01 I had before. What is the sharp condition you can expect in order to the energy of all possible vibrations to be measurable from here? The sharp condition is L1 over L2 to be irrational. I give you an example of why L1 over L2 being irrational is necessary. If L1 was equal to L2, then you could build this odd eigenfunction, which is only sitting in these two strings, for which the natural extension over here is zero. And then you see immediately that there is an eigenfunction of this particular tripod, regardless of what the length of L is, and for which the energy, the total energy, will be 1, but the recording over this point, over that external vertex, will vanish. Okay, of course, even though you make L1 over L2 irrational, we know from the previous example that the energy we will recover will be something subtle, depending on the Diophantine properties of L1 over L2. Okay, and this solves the problem for the tripod. Okay, let me observe that the minimal time you get for doing that is 2i's L plus L1 plus L2. 2L because first you have to propagate the energy along the first string, L, and then L1 over L1 plus L2 times 2 because that was the time you obtained for the string in which these two lengths were adjacent one after the other. So in this drawing I don't know whether you can see this dotted line. This is dotted line is for the string, the third one. We can easily record, we can easily estimate, and this L1 and L2 for the two ones that determine the... Yes?
At that point, that's already where it's L1 plus
That's a good remark that I forgot to. So this was in the transparency I skipped because I think it was badly placed on that over there. Indeed, when you do this, you don't get the characteristic time, which will be 2 times x0, 1 minus x0, but rather 2. Let me show you in this graph. So the time you need in order for making measurements from this point is not the characteristic time, as you said, which will be twice the maximum of this or this, but rather twice everything. Why? Because, well, the reason is that you are dealing with a Cauchy problem of order 2, and you are only making one measurement. Okay? So a condition about, you know, rays need to cross to pass 2 eyes. Something happened there, right?
That's okay. We are.
They cross, but only once.
They need to cross 2 eyes in order to get the. Okay. So now, if you go to more general stars, the same result is true. So assume you have an star with capital N strings. You are making measurement over here. You will propagate information on there, and then you will get to the same situation as before, but in which not only 2 strings are glued together, but there are n minus 1. What is the sharp condition? If you work a little bit more, what you will realize is that the sharp condition is that all mutual ratios are irrational. So any pair of lengths you can choose over here, the quotient will be irrational. This, of course, is a necessary condition, right? Because if the ratio between this one and this one will be rational, then you will have an eigenfunction sitting on this one and there and without touching all the others. So this condition is necessary, and if you work a little bit more, is sufficient as well. And the comments are the same. What is the best time? The best time is twice the addition of all the lengths because of that comment. And second, the energy you will recover is never the energy in the natural L2 space, but something weaker that will depend once more on the Diophantine approximation issues. Now, if you want to convince yourself that, you know, these results are sharp, what you can use is this kind of wave and anti-wave argument to show that what you can do analytically here is the best you can do. I didn't say that before. Let me go back again.
I have another question.
Yes, but you could also only ask one, so no, just before I forget, I mentioned here that if x0 is rational, using a finite number of waves and anti-wave, you can make sure that whenever they cross each other, they do it on this point, and then you see nothing over here. Of course, if x0 is irrational, you cannot do that. But you can use the classical result on the Diophantine approximation theory and argue as follows. Say, assume x0 is irrational. Well, but I know there is a rational sitting next to it. I use this rational, this construction for this rational, and then I see a solution which is vanishing on this rational number. Does it vanish on the original irrational one? Of course it doesn't. But of course the trace is very little. If you do that carefully, using the classical results on the Diophantine approximation theory, you get sharp results, which means that for algebraic numbers, you get losses of finite number of derivatives, and for Liouville numbers, you will lose an infinite number of derivatives in the sense that the waves will be exponentially small. Yes?
When you said wave and anti-wave, it's not the same as building a solution of the wave equation which involves only modes which are zero on some specific edge.
In this, yes, it would be total. It's totally the same. In this case, it's totally the same, except for the fact that this way of thinking, for instance, will work if you were in a domain, and then you have an array, and you were making measurements here and there, and these two lengths, relevant lengths, will be rationally related. Then you could use Gaussian beams over there, and the same result will be true, but still probably not clear whether it is related to an eigenfunction issue or not. But here it is. Of course it is.
It's a problem with nodal sets.
Of course, in here it is. Yeah.
Nodal set of Schlegel.
Yeah. But for instance, when for me at least, when you try to explain what is going on this star, for me it's easier to understand using this ray business, because you can simply draw one ray starting here, arriving there it will split, whenever reaching there it will come back, but if you are careful enough and use the fact that there is rationality, you will make sure that using a finite number of anti-waves, you will be able to... Of course, this corresponds to the existence of eigenfunctions for which this is a nodal point. But this is a different way of understanding it. Okay. Yes.
So when you're saying you're losing derivatives...
Sure. No, you are totally right. So which what I'm saying is that the best inequality you could expect is this one. Yeah? So when you look to the problem the first time, you say, well, I was using Ingham inequality from the boundary. I was able to prove some equivalence between the large L2 and little L2 norm. Let me try to do it in the interior. In the interior, I compute the L2 norm of the trace of the solution, the recorded motion of this point x0 during the time interval 0t. I would like to recover the little L2 norm of the coefficients. This is impossible. There are weights, which depends on x0. And then these weights, these are the main results, are different from 0 for all k if and only if x0 is irrational. The best lower bound you can get is C over K. I think this is the Dirichlet theorem.
You mean different from 1, not different from 0?
No, different from 0. In order to make them different, if some of them vanishes, it means that you are completely losing one of the Fourier components of the system. Okay, so you are losing one of the components of the system. You can also think of a finite number of couplet oscillators in which this is representing the energy of each component. Okay, and then what the second statement says, the best irrational you can find, you will at least, these weights will at least degenerate a C over K, right? This will be sharp. And this corresponds in the Sobolev wave of thinking to losing one derivative. So there are squares here because the weights are. So this, with respect to the initial energy of the solution, will not be the L2 energy, but it will be the H minus 1 energy in the Sobolev space. And then the last claim was that still, this happens only for very few irrational numbers. If you like to do it, you can use these constructions by Liouville, for instance, and show that there are numbers for which these weights degenerate exponentially. So in that case, the energy you will recover will be something of like the dual of analytic functions or something like this. Very, very weak norms. Okay? And this is related to this possibility of using this wave and anti-wave argument with rational points which are nearby the rational one, so that the traces you can measure are very weak. Okay, so what about trees? Well, the first statement I found it in a book by Lagnese, Leugerin, and Schmidt. It was, in fact, what motivated me to think on this. So I will show you in a picture what the statement says. The statement says, if you have a tree, so no loops, and you are making measurements on all but one external vertex, so if you are measuring in all the vertices, or at most you are missing one of them, then you can recover the total energy of the vibration without missing anything. And the argument is, use simply the sidewise propagation of the energy. And the proof is in this picture. So this is the first step. You have information on that point, you propagate to this string. Information on that point, you propagate, and you do it once. Once you get here, you say, well, I have full information on this one, and this one. The fourth one is sitting here, but if I use the boundary conditions or the node conditions I have here, this gives me complete information on both the Dirichlet and the Neumann trace on that point, that point, that point, that point, for the unknown strings. So I iterate once more, and this is what I get. So now I have information on all these red lines. Of course, in the next iteration, I will be able to obtain also information on that one, and then on the last one too, because of the measurement I was doing over here. Okay. So, but this is the only result you can prove with this technique. This corresponds precisely to making measurements on the string from one point, one is missing. But as soon as you say, well, let us assume that two of them are missing. So this time, this one and this one will be missing. We have information on all others, but these two are missing. Let us try to push this argument forward, and you see what happens. You arrive there, you continue, but once you are there, you cannot continue anymore, because you have two unknowns and not enough information coming. So what is the equivalent problem to this one? Well, in fact, we know what the answer is. This is exactly the same as the one string problem in which I am making measurements over there. So if you tell me what the answer to this problem is, I will tell you that you will get total information on motion if and only if these two lengths are mutually irrational, but at the price of losing the energy you wanted to recover and getting something which is much weaker that will depend certainly on the Diophantine class in which this number is. Okay? So this is the result you can get. But I wanted to go farther. So I wanted really to solve the opposite problem in which information is only given on one single external vertex. So now the game to play is, can you recover the energy of solutions if you are giving information only on that point? So you have only one information, and your network might be huge. The only condition you are imposing is that it is a tree. Okay. So we worked hard on this using analytical tools, and in the end we discovered that there is an if and only if condition, which is very nice to say, but once you have obtained it, you say, well, is it useful at all? Well, not so much. But let me tell you what I can do. So the if and only if condition for being able to recover information on all the string, on all the network, only from one vertex, is that whenever two subtrees match, the corresponding spectra have empty intersection. So this is a kind of hierarchical condition that, again, I show you by this picture. So what does the condition say? Well, this and this have to be mutually irrational. Because mutually irrational means, for strings, to have a spectra with empty intersection. Let me recall you that the spectrum for the string equation is k squared pi squared over L1 squared. And for the other one will be m squared pi squared over L2 squared. These two numbers being irrational mutually means that the two spectra have empty intersection. So these two have to be mutually irrational. And these two, too, and this with this one, too, and this one with this one, too, and this one with this one, too. But now in the next generation, the condition says that the spectrum of this subtree in green has to have empty intersection with this spectrum of this subtree in red. And then you go on. And if this condition is fulfilled, then you can guarantee that you recover some energy. Remarks, this condition is sharp. As soon as for two of these subtrees, the spectra match, then you can build a localized eigenfunction which leaves all the rest of the network at rest, and therefore the inequality cannot be true wherever the energy you choose is. Then the condition is, of course, the natural extension of the one I have given you before for more simple things like stars. And this condition, of course, is generically true, but now, given a network, guaranteeing whether this is true or not, I think this is a difficult task.
To be sure, your condition is equivalent to that, to the fact that there is no eigenfunction which vanish on the...
That's right. That's right. And I will come to this. Okay. Yeah. Okay, and now let me go to general networks. The only thing we can say, because we were precisely thinking as Colin de Valier is doing, except for the fact that it took us longer, we said, well, what can we do about general networks? How can we generalize this kind of things? Then we went into this beautiful theory, which is quite sophisticated. It's based on the Berlin-Malievan theorem, which is a great achievement, as you know. This is about the spectral radius of a sequence. This should be mu k over here. And it's telling you what is the sharp value for which combinations of these complex exponentials are filling the space of continuous functions on this interval. And based on that theorem, there was this nice corollary.
For which topology you mean?
I think for the topology of continuous functions.
Uniform convergence.
I think so. And then there was this corollary that once you know Berlin-Malievan theorem, which is difficult, which says that the spectral radius is related to the density of this sequence. What Arwa and Jafar were able to prove is that whenever you go beyond, the time is slightly larger than this completeness radius, then you have an inequality. And if the time is smaller than this completeness radius, then that inequality may not hold. The only difference, you see, this is very close to Ingham theorem. You have, again, the time has to be greater than to some important quantity. This time is 2r, r being the completeness ratio, except for the fact that this time the weights are not given. The only thing you are saying in that theorem is that there exist some weights, but you cannot say, as in Ingham inequality, that the weights are precisely the unit ones. Okay? So again, this norm could be very weak from a Sobolev point of view.
Confusion of k's and n's.
Eh?
The confusion of k's and n's.
Yeah, so k is equal to n and mu is equal to lambda. Thank you.
So on the right hand side, it's
rho
is,
n.
Yeah, and then you should add this.
A sum.
Yeah, there should be a sum. Well, in fact, writing it with a sum or not, since I am not giving you the rho case, is the same, right? Because you could divide by k squared and sum. But you can think there is a sum and that will be easier. Okay? And the point is that when you are on the network, these are results I learned from the works by Von Bello and Niquez in particular. What you can prove is that the completeness radius is exactly equal to the total length of the network. Because looking to the high frequency asymptotics of the spectrum of the network, you can show that at least roughly enough for using this Berlin-Malievan theorem, then the completeness radius is equal to L, which is precisely the distribution, the asymptotic distribution of eigenvalues. You can prove that using basically, I think, the Rayleigh principle, comparison eigenvalues between Dirichlet and Neumann problems, for which the network is somehow in between. Because on the external nodes you have Dirichlet conditions, but you don't have them on the internal ones.
Does it mean that this L of mu k depends only on the asymptotic behavior of mu k?
That's right. If you are not interested on the critical time 2r, this is what the theory tells you. Okay? And then according to this, if you apply this to the network, you can say the following. Take a general planar network. If time is greater than 2i is the total length, then you have an inequality if and only if there are no eigenfunctions which are addressed on that string. So in that sense, this theorem is telling you that all we did for trees and so on using propagation arguments, you can do them in one single step using Fourier series expansion and Berlin-Malievan theorem to the price of not being able to say what the space is and by making the assumption that there are no eigenfunctions which are trapped in the interior of the network, which is a problem that, again, will depend on topology and the Diophantine approximation issues, but for which, unfortunately, as far as I know, there is no clear answer.
Except that it's not the generic.
Of course, again, generically, you know, this kind of properties. But now, given a network with a given configuration and a choice of lengths, saying whether this is true or not, I think is an impossible problem. Okay, so now to conclude, simply some remarks. I learned that recently I like this formula very much. This is why I have taken this transparency. But if I give another lecture, I will show it anyhow. So this is about this Kanai transformation that I wonder whether this is of some use also for other systems like Hamiltonian systems. The Kanai formula says it was derived, if I am correct, to analyze the Gaussian kernels on manifolds. Okay? So for some things, for some problems, the heat equation is very nice because it's regularizing infinite velocity of propagation. But for reading the underlying geometry of the manifold in which you are living is very bad because it's so much mixing that you don't see anything. So this Kanai transformation was derived precisely to relate solutions of the heat equation, the fundamental solution of the heat equation, to the geometry of the manifold. And then what Kanai did was to say, well, in order to do that, I would like to have a formula relating the solution of the heat equation and the solution of the wave equation. Because for the wave equation, I know that relevant things happen along rays. Rays are related to the geodesic flow, and therefore I can read the geometry on the manifold on the wave problem. If I am able to relate the heat equation and the wave equation, then I have a way of transferring solutions of the heat equation into geometry back and forth. And this is what he found. He found a nice formula you can check yourself, in which what you do is you take a solution of the wave equation, W, you make some kind of convolution with the heat kernel, and then what you recover is the solution of the heat equation. And I have written you here what the rule is. So you take a wave equation that you don't need to be in one dimension, or it can be any general operator. It could be also a matrix or an operator A being self-adjoint. Take the corresponding wave problem in which the fictitious time is little s. Now solve the heat equation in time and s, which always is a one-dimensional heat process for which the Gaussian heat kernel is well known. And then mix, link these two variables through this infinite integral, which is well defined because this guy is bounded in S, and this one decays on S because of the decay of the heat kernel. What you get now, because you are linking this to this, finally what you are getting is one time derivative equal to the Laplacian of U. Once you understand this trick, you can also do it for other models. For instance, this has been used to compute solutions of the Schrödinger operator from solutions of the wave equation. Okay? Well, you do the same trick again. Take the solution of the wave equation in this fictitious time.
Sorry, is you the left-hand side of the red equation?
Yeah, so this is you. Okay. Sorry. So take the wave equation in this fictitious time. Take the solution of the one-dimensional Schrödinger kernel, in which T is the real time and S is the fictitious space, mix them up, and then you will get the solution of the Schrödinger equation. Now you can think yourself, can I do that with given two PDEs, can I always relate them? And the answer is not. Why? Because in order for doing that, you need the kernel you will compute here to be nicely behaved so that this integral is well defined. So for instance, if you want to relate, to compute the solution of the wave problem from the solution of the heat kernel, you will not be able to do it. Why? Because for doing that, you will have to use the solution not of kt equal to kss, but rather ktt equal to ks, which is ill-posed. Therefore, you will not have enough integrability on this kernel to do that. And this is natural, right? Because as we said, the heat equation is so much mixing that once you compute the solution of the heat problem, you cannot extract out of it the solution of the wave equation.
In principle, you can extract anything from the wave kernel because it's more or less a Fourier transform. So you have a function of the Laplace transform. Okay?
That's right.
And you know the Fourier transform.
So I think this is used also in numerics.
It's an inverse Fourier transform.
Yeah.
Because this function, A minus A squared over 4T,
yeah,
is exactly the Fourier transform of A, T.
Yes, yeah, sure.
Okay, that's
true. So I think people call
any function. Yeah. Which the Fourier transform is nice.
Yeah, you can. I think this has a name in numerics as well, but I don't remember. It's transmutation or... I don't know. But there is some hierarchy on different schemes. You can apply this at the discrete level as well. And there are schemes you can recover from others, but not always, right? Well, so to conclude, wave propagation, I wanted to say your networks is equal to wave propagation plus graph theory plus number theory. And then there are some open problems doing it in 3D. I have taken this picture. I think it's a relevant place in the UK. You may recognize.
Bristol.
Or Edinburgh, or I don't know.
The Towers of London.
Okay, so this is, I was there Saturday, so it's very nice. So you see 3D networks, that will be much more difficult. Consequences on nonlinear problems, I don't know how far.
Where is planarity involved in your...
Psychologically. On the psychology of the author,
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so probably many of these things go to 3D, but I never thought
that's
on this.
Same. Yeah. I mean, your men has a...
Probably the last ones, yes. Now, the tree case, I don't know.
I mean, you don't have constraints by the geometry of the nodes, of the integral edges. You have not...
Because you are thinking on the same model, but if you, I was thinking on doing something like the system of elasticity, of course.
Kirchhoff condition.
But this is precisely rather the system of elasticity than the scalar acoustic wave equation on a 3D network. So consequences on nonlinear problems, I don't know. This is certainly difficult. Because Diophantine approximation issues are involved. Numerical approximation issues, I'm sure there is a lot done on numerics for Hamiltonian systems that is of some use for analyzing these problems. On the other hand, probably nodal condition and Diophantine approximation issues make, if you want to have solvers that are stable for a long time, this will be a hard task. Now, is there a decomposition argument for a planar network that will generalize the one I have given you for trees? I don't know. For trees, there is a clear orientation. Given a planar network, there is no. So I don't know how you can argue by this kind of subgraphs and coupling spectra to build the same kind of necessary and sufficient condition. Characterizing the networks with localized modes is a very hard problem. We have reduced it to that one, but now this one, I don't know. More general joint conditions, of course, will be very relevant. Here's some publicity. All this is in a recent book I wrote with René Dagger, in which all the proofs are there, so don't ask me. I can show you the PDF if you like. And then to conclude, this is again justification that we are indeed doing highly oscillatory problems. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, we have had many questions, but there is time for more.
Yes. It's about, in the case of the interval, what is known about the control in case of heat equation? What is the solution?
Well, you can apply this precisely this kind of Kanai transform.
And what you get?
And what you get is that if x0 is irrational, you get an inequality. Uh-huh. And the norm you get is better because basically you have the time dissipation that will improve these coefficients by a factor of the order of basically exponential minus k squared times t. K squared for the dissipation.
Is it true that you need only a small interval of time because of
Yes, it is true.
You have no more finite propagation.
It is true. And then if you are careful enough, you can recover it from the Kanai formula. Also for Schrödinger. So for Schrödinger, you get the same inequality for all time, except for the fact that this time the weights are the same because of conservation of energy.
There's, of course, a crucial case when there's no boundary vertex. Of course, this can happen. And another question is, what I think is so nice is really the sharp criterion, and we have frequencies that are immanent to the whole network only, and frequencies that come out of single edges.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, the picture you shown, especially for the star, these belong to edges, or when you just mm-hmm. couple two edges, which gives another string. And so is it true that if I can control all the network immanent frequencies, that I can then control from the boundary vertices?
Yeah, this is what the Berlin-Malian theorem tells you, right?
If I only can control the network immanent frequencies, I'm not so sure, because there are a lot of, in general, there are a lot of other...
What do you mean, immanent frequencies, then?
I come back to this.
So you are now talking of the tree or the general graph?
Any graph.
Okay, so let us...
context. For instance, this one. This is a nice example. And if it is clear, if you have an eigenfunction of strictly a proper support, then we cannot control.
Okay.
That's quite clear. But if we have now frequencies that only are due to the whole network, that never can appear on a single edge,
or
then of course we can say something.
Sure.
And is it sufficient to recover all these?
Sure. And this is what, if I understand correctly your question, this is what our last theorem using Berlin-Malian says. The whole problem is a spectral problem. So everything can be reduced to the spectral problem.
This is very nice for me because...
But this is a 1D result because you need concentration. The density of eigenvalues you can allow in Berlin-Malian is the one of the 1D string equation of length capital L, right? If you try to do it in multi-D, the density is too tight.
Yeah.
This is like the gap condition is not fulfilled.
Yeah.
So what the Berlin-Malian corollary tells you, well, this corollary you followed from Berlin-Malian, is that if you go between two capital L, the total length, writing an inequality for the wave operator, or writing it for each isolated eigenfunction is the same, except for the price that you will have weights that you don't actually know how they look like.
Maybe I can ask one more question.
Yeah, it's free.
Maybe it would be a nice problem. You start with a graph, and you ask yourself, what is the best point x0 in order to control the situation?
Sure. Yeah.
Because then you have a kind of nice problem, which Sobolev norm you will control and things like that. And you know already the answer for the interval. It's like algebraic of degree 2 or something like that. We give you something, a difference between points on the graph, and maybe there is always a huge set of points for which you have a nice control. Maybe it's, I'm not sure. But,
well, of course.
No, because if you have function which vanish. No,
so this is, of course.
Assume it's a generic graph, okay?
Yeah, but so this is related to this, right? So you take the eigenfunctions of your network.
Yes.
They are a countable number of them. Take any point.
You
look
take
the
a
traces.
Point which is in.
Take the. The
there
diminishing.
If there are no degenerate eigenvalues,
sure.
There are some points
of
which
course.
Are outside
sure.
any nodal set. Okay?
That's right.
And now you want to choose a point for which the decay is.
That's right. So
then,
so you take the
maybe it's a nice point, I'm not sure.
You take the lower envelope of this, which
yes.
is decreasing, and then you ask the question of what is the choice of x0 that makes
point?
This one
yes.
you know as positive as possible.
And possibly it's more or less independent of the graph.
So again this is homework.
No,
but I think this will be a difficult one.
Well, not sure.
If it is about
characterizing it, proving that there is one, probably not. Characterizing it.
No, but only if you know that it's a positive measure or something like that. You know, the set of points for which Diophantine approximation
sure.
is good
sure.
is a measure one.
That's true.
So if you put at random, you
mm-hmm.
work.
Mm-hmm.
That's
true.
No, but. Okay.
I even don't know, though that's a relevant question. I even don't know whether for general trees you can guarantee that you can do it as in 1D, in which the degeneracy was simply k squared, in which you were losing only one derivative.
That's already something.
This is already something to look at. Mm-hmm. There are choices of points for which you could lose only one derivative.
Yes, that would be.
This is related to how narrow the gap in the spectrum, the total spectrum is.
I'm not sure.
So you write the total, yeah, so this is certainly the case. So you draw the eigenvalues of your problem. What you are saying when we say that the counting function is the one of the string of length capital L, what we are saying is what is the asymptotic distribution. But if you really like to know what are these weights, you have to know how close they can get one after another. And then in 1D, again, but for networks, I don't know. Okay.
Just as the questions are free, dear Enrique, I might add another homework, because all you did was for the energy-preserving consistent Kirchhoff law, the classical incident flow law. Now let us put some weights into it that we control, that we know. Then, of course, in general, if these weights are strictly positive, you lose energy.
Mm-hmm.
And in some sense, you can control this better than the energy preserving, because you have a difference of energy gain at the end, at some external nodes, and so on. Do you think this would yield other sharp control results or not?
So I will propose a home subwork, right? Which is, can we use, for instance, Kanai's formula for that problem?
Because...
So partially, right? So it will be some, like, you are not going from wave to heat over the network, but you are only putting some dissipation on nodes and trying to find some generalship.
The problem is the general energy functional is no longer working as a reactor.
Of course, of course. And then, but things should improve. I mean, what Kanai formula tells you is that if you add dissipation, things should improve. And now whether you can prove it or not, this is a different matter.
I'm very happy about the good organization of this conference, because tomorrow I will propose you another type of Kirchhoff condition, a dynamical Kirchhoff condition, where you can get some of these things in more generality and get some more waves in a certain sense.
So the answer is known for one string with a point mass, which is slow, and for which oscillations when crossing this mass gain one derivative. So you can take the network, and in every internal node, you instead of taking a point, you can put a heavy mass. And then the same kind of results I have explained here will be the same, except for the fact that whenever you cross one of these masses, you will have to lose one further derivative. So you will get the same kind of inequalities, but for different weights. But I don't know of any systematic way of doing that. I will have to start everything again. So it will be nice to have some kind of black box for doing that. So this is the soup homework. Okay.
Thank you very much. Sorry, there was another question.
So I'm just going to... The sort of best possible is this K squared here, is it? You started off talking about measuring at the edge, and now you're measuring the first derivative on users.
But this is a very interesting question. So the answer is simply that when you are measuring here, you already know that phi is equal to zero. You have one condition. And now you are adding information on this one. So in fact, you have two data. When you are doing it in the interior, you only have one data. And this is when you have to lose one derivative. And this is related to this periodicity business I have shown you. So this is the simplest homework to be done is this one, which is already nice enough. So the best you can do is to obtain an h minus 1 information over psi. Or if you like, if you want to recover psi in L2, you will have to compute the first derivative of f and the first derivative of g in L2 and choose L1 over L2 to be to be algebraic of degree 1 or whatever.
Enrique will be collecting the homework on Monday morning. So.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.